Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
What's going on? It's Isaac, your pal from Inappropriate Happiness, back with another week of fun for you and for us. It's really fun for us. And with me, it's the earliest she has ever been awake, Karina Reichman.
What's up, 10 a.m.? How we doing? Hi, Isaac. It's a terrific, terrific thing to be recording this with you this morning here at Inappropriate Happiness HQ, dude.
You know, I joke about it being the earliest you've ever been awake, but last week you were actually up and out the door quite early, sleeping even less.
Were you shocked?
I was delighted, actually. It was really fun to see you in full swing with your Seth Meyers gig and then to watch you on TV right here on this couch.
What a beautiful thing. I mean, crazy, crazy. It's funny, you know, you get so worked up for these dates on the calendar, right? And you're like, holy shit, what? You know, and you have to learn a whole new method and system of doing things and meet 100 new people. And, you know, I was nervous. I am not going to lie to you. I was a wreck for the first day or two there. And not because it was particularly demanding in any way. It was just like, it just felt so new and I wanted to kill it so hard. You know what I mean? Like, which I've been known to like get nervous about things that like I really want to like, you know, put my best foot forward at.
And how you described it is that it while it might not be demanding, it's very particular in terms of what it asks of you.
Wildly. And you have to be very aware of just this whole new system where it's the minutiae of it is so wild, you know, and everybody has these jobs and everybody knows what's happening and everybody is pro to a T, you know, and it's just a wild thing. It's like a small city and you're watching all these little pieces come together where, you know, there's the guy with the cue card that says 3 minutes and then 1 minute and then 30 seconds and then boom, you're on, you know, or whatever. And Seth Meyers himself and the consummate professional, I don't know how he does it, you know, just on point, unbelievable. And the band, you know, we're just waiting for our cue to do our thing, you know, and you're there with your in-ears in, getting, you know, prompted by the musical director in real time. So you could be watching Danny DeVito speak, but in your ears, you're listening to somebody telling you what song, quote unquote, you're about to play. Very fascinating shit, Isaac. Very fascinating and wildly dialed in. But I would say by the end there, I felt very dialed myself, which is great. And I would do it again in a heartbeat. It was so fun. It was just like, I love show businessy shit like that, you know?
Well, Inappropriate Happiness is a show of the auditory persuasion. But those of you who are listening should know that Karina is wearing a shirt from The Late Night with Seth Meyers. And you told a story to me about your mom's visit to the show.
Isaac, you are on point this morning, my guy. Yes. So the on the Wednesday, which was my middle day, I was very lucky. The first day I didn't have a guest to come to the show just because I didn't know I was allowed to have them. But then they were like, yeah, if you want people to come like in the studio audience, please. So on the Wednesday, my longtime drummer, Chris Corsico came, which was fantastic. And he saw Danny DeVito. And then on the Thursday, my mother came to the show, which was so fantastic. And she, along with my boyfriend, and the two of them sat in the audience. So cute. And at the end of the show, there's like the warm-up comic who is throwing Seth Meyers t-shirts into the audience, right? And, I thought it was hilarious because it's a little bit out of character for my mother to just want like the grab bag, you know, t-shirt from something like that. But of course, I told her that afterwards. She's like, it's not out of character. You were on the show. It's fucking awesome. And I was like, oh, right. That's true. I was on the show. Okay. But she basically, made herself very apparent to the warm-up comic, being, you know, standing up and making it very clear that she wanted this t-shirt. So he throws the t-shirt, and the story goes that my mother like leapt into the air and barreled down a couple of people, not really, but a little bit. And everybody was like, wow, nice catch, you know. And she was like, yeah. She's never been so stoked about a t-shirt in her life. And then that prompted us to, you know, I saw her, and me and the producer, Eric, I was like, oh, that's my mom up there. And he was like, oh my God. And we took her down. We did a photo shoot on the, the Seth Meyers couch and desk. It was a wholesome, excellent time. So it's amazing to be visited at work, if you will.
I mean, that's a really cool thing to get to go to see your loved one do.
Totally. And she was wildly into it, which was very cool. And I was stoked to have her there. It was so fun and amazing. And then we walked to Bryant Park and drank some waters and, you know, chatted. And, it was just a really fun New York kind of thing to do. It's a very touristy thing to do. So like us, like lifelong New Yorkers, we've never like done it per se. And everybody else there is like, you know, it's like, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Kansas. I'm from Florida. Like, you know what I mean? But like, my mom's like, she's not, you know, she's lived here for a very long time, you know? So it was fun for her to just sort of see something like that, which she kind of hasn't, you know? So that was cool.
Well, speaking of hanging out with your mom in Rockefeller Center.
Oh, yeah.
Last Thursday, your last night on Seth Meyers, I took my mom to go see the Doobie Brothers at Radio City Music Hall.
Dude.
Right around the corner from where you taped.
And how the hell was that?
Well, you know, you're talking about touristy experiences, and I think my mom felt a little bit like a tourist to the event because she grew up with the music of the Doobie Brothers. She talks about her parents listening to it. But when I was like, hey, mom, do you want to go see the Doobie Brothers? She was kind of like, sure. It wasn't like, oh, my God, my favorite band.
Right. And it wasn't like, oh, mom, like I got these Doobie Brothers tickets because I know you love the Doobie Brothers.
Right.
You scored these tickets knowing that you wanted to go, and you were like, yo, maybe my mom would enjoy this.
Exactly.
Sure.
And I think we really both liked it quite a bit. It was the 50th anniversary tour for the Doobie Brothers.
Dude, that is no small number.
Michael McDonald is back in the band. He sings backups on Peg, the Steely Dan song. You may know him from his solo music, and he's made some wonderful contributions to the Doobie Brothers and other classic yacht rock-esque music over the years.
Can you even imagine seeing the Doobies without him?
No, that would be very weird.
He, to me, as sort of, you know, a quasi-tourist to the Doobie Brothers, being born many years later, you know, he strikes me as sort of the glue who holds it all together.
Well, my mom said that it would be like a bunch of side dishes without an entree to see them without Michael McDonald.
I like the way she put that.
She also said they are like the kettle corn of music, which I think is really astute, and I'm not sure what it means, but it's right. Like, they are the kettle corn of music in a way.
I love that.
We love kettle corn.
We do love, yeah. There's no shade here. This is pure, this is the kettle corn, you know, loving posse right here. So that's super interesting. And obviously seeing anything Radio City Music Hall, to me, is a treat. It's a beautiful room. You want to be there. And I think that's a great act to see there, actually.
Well, just a few other notes from the show. It was being taped for PBS, Public Broadcasting, which is just like a nice, I think that's a fun detail about it. It was surprisingly upbeat. There were like zero ballads. I mean, there were slower songs, but everything had a pretty driving pulse, which I thought was pretty interesting for you know, an act of their sort.
People celebrating their 50th anniversary. Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Right. And my last comment on this, because we should really move on. They have a song that they play ninth in the set list called Clear as the Driven Snow, from their 1972 album, The Captain and Me.
Wow.
And boy, oh boy, was it clear as the driven snow. They really brought the house down with this cut.
Holy shit.
It's definitely a highlight of the evening. So if you're listening and you go, oh yeah, the Doobie Brothers, listen to the music and Long Train Running, I wonder what else they've written. Check out Clear as the Driven Snow. It is a very strange song. I really enjoyed it. And that just about wraps it up for me. But you returned to this venue just a night later.
I did. But Isaac, were you the youngest person there by 20 years?
Oh, I mean, this 30? Was a very extreme instance of being the youngest person at a show.
Maybe 40. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it seems like this was, you were one of the younger folks in maybe a 50 mile radius. No, just kidding.
It's really nice to see people of all ages and, you know, of all, I mean, it would kind of be a different thing to see this show in an outdoor amphitheater in a different part of the country because, I don't know. It seemed like there were people who were like kind of coming out of live music retirement to go check this out.
Sure.
And I know they do a lot of like co-headlining tours with like Santana and Earth, Wind & Fire. That would probably be a different vibe. But this was definitely an Upper West Side PBS watching crowd checking out the Doobie Brothers.
Seems that way. And that is just great. That is
absolutely
fantastic.
Absolutely. Oh,
love it. Well, I'm so glad you were there. I'm not going to lie to you, Isaac. I did return to Radio City Music Hall the very next night. This is Friday night. Different scene, different crowd. The band is Phoenix. They're from France. And it was a really awesome thing. I was super stoked about it. I felt, you know, I was definitely not the youngest person there. And the music was so captivating and the show was so captivating. It was like, it looked beautiful. They sort of had these frames of, you know, LED screens that they both were submerged in and could stand on. Like the drummer was on top of sort of these frames. I'm describing it strangely because it's hard to describe. It was just really beautiful, you know, and everything was sort of projection mapped or whatever, you know, it was like these video walls basically, and it corresponded to every tune. Sometimes it was like crazy abstract rainbow waves, and sometimes it was like it started out in the, you know, middle of the universe, and then it slowly zoomed in on the earth, and then through the clouds, and then through the trees, and then into a person, and then into the person's bloodstream, and into their DNA, and then it just vibrated out into obscurity, or infinity, rather. Anyway, very cool look of the show, and the band played their absolute asses off. It was super engaging the entire time. There was not a moment of the show where I was like, ah, you know, I could piss right now. You know what I mean? I was just like captivated the entire time. Excellent songs, excellent look, you know, just really a beautiful night of music and super fun indie rock dance party vibes.
That's very cool. You know, I never had a Phoenix phase,
yeah.
But I've always respected them and liked what I've heard. And maybe now's my time.
Your brother had a big Phoenix phase.
He actually took my mom to go see Phoenix at the Apollo Theater.
Is that right?
Yeah.
There you go. Dude, your mom makes the rounds. Dude.
I know. Phoenix, Doobie Brothers.
So great. Yeah, it's funny. When I think of Phoenix, I sort of do think of your brother enjoying the music.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah, and I, for really good reason, because honestly, he sort of looks like he belongs in the band as well. Like, your brother could play absolutely any instrument in this band, and it would just look the part. I know that sounds funny, but if you saw them, you'd see what I mean.
I know what you mean.
They have the same hair as him, the same look as him, and he would just, like, blend right in, you know? Very, very cool. Really enjoyable, you know? And just, like, it honestly made me come home and think, like, oh, like, I could sort of write music like this. You know what I mean? Like, there was something about it that was captivating to me, where it's just like energetic, pop tinged, rock and roll dance music, like very, very cool. I don't know. I was really into it, and I'm very glad I went. And then the next day, Isaac, I returned to full form playing hippie festivals once again after a week on Seth Meyers. Doing the opposite of playing hippie festivals.
Well, this was just no regular, hippie festival.
Tell
right?
the people
this,
what it
this
was.
This is the 30th installment of Camp Creek, the Max Creek Festival.
You know, that is so correct. And it's such an interesting thing because, like, Max Creek, right? I bet you most people listening to this have no idea who Max Creek are. But the people who are listening to this and do know probably fucking love Max Creek. It's a very interesting thing. Another band celebrating, you know, their 50th year as a band?
Yeah. I mean,
if
they,
not over,
they
like
have
52nd.
Been around a sneaky long time.
It's out of control, right? And they really stole my heart. You know, I'm, of course, you know, younger than the anniversary of their festival, right? So, like, I am not a Max Creek aficionado in any way, actually. And I'm a little embarrassed to say, because you know what? If you named to me most jam bands from the early day, like, I bet you I could name you at least a song. I'm going to admit to you, Isaac, I can't name you a Max Creek song. Can't name you one. So, which I usually is not the case for me. I feel like I've at least done a bit of a dive, you know, if peripheral or otherwise. So I was a stranger to the vibe, and they welcomed me with such open arms, and it was such a beautiful time. This is in Bozra, Connecticut, a place I had never been. And it's sort of on like this campsite, campgrounds, on a lake. People are on floaties and kayaks and like raging in the lake while you're playing. There's like, if you're playing on this like sandy beach basically on a stage, which was just a delight. And it had such a homegrown family atmosphere that was super endearing and lovely. Everyone who worked there could not have been more delightful. And we got up there and played our asses off right before the aforementioned Max Creek, which was super fun on Saturday. Played 75 minutes of glory. I jumped down into the audience with my bass, my wireless bass, at some point, and, you know, raged in the crowd with the people. It just seemed like the thing to do. And our friends in Melt and Michaela Davis's band played on Thursday night. It was just the two bands, right? And everybody reported back that they just had the best time as well. And Veronica, the singer of the band Melt, during their encore, went into said lake with her clothes on and then came back up on stage soaking wet, and everybody like freaked the fuck out, and it was a super rock and roll moment. Wish I could have been there to see that. That is super amazing. And I talked to some pal, you know, some people in the audience being like, it was so amazing to have Melt, Michaela, and you on this year's lineup. Like, not only a strong female presence, but just a young exuberance at this festival. Like, we're so happy that you all were here, you know, and that means a lot, you know. And those are my peers and my friends, and our peers and friends, and it's just like really cool to see all of us on this festival, you know, with this band that's, you know, twice our age, have been doing it forever. And we have such respect for them, you know, because they have been doing this for such a long time. And it's just really nice that they had us. So that was very, very fun. And I made an announcement on stage for the record. I was like, after like halfway through the show, I was like, hey, guy, you know, I mentioned that I was on NBC all week and that I had to learn this whole like sort of new code of ethics and how to, you know, be on television and all this stuff. And it was super like exact and very dialed in. And all the, you know, I met all these people and they were like, where did you come from? And I was like, I play hippie festivals, motherfucker. And all the crowd went wild. And I was like, thank you for welcoming me back to my roots, you know?
Oh, totally. Which and I mean, awesome. In a world where the music festival scene and concerts in general, there's such a plethora, and even at times you could say an oversaturation and new things that are trying to sort of sprout up, and God bless it all.
Oh, yeah.
But it's amazing to see a festival where, like you're saying, like Max Creek, it's such a kind of particular act, and the people who really care and pay attention are there every year, and the, you know, the lineup and the marketing for this isn't, you know, supposed to be sort of blasting people out of their seats.
Sure.
But, you know, at the same time, they're paying attention to important up and coming bands. They are keeping with this tradition, and they are, you know, kind of emphasizing atmosphere and, you know, good spirit and, you know, the enjoyment of camping and live music.
Yeah.
And scenery and environment. It's like, that's just like, I don't know, like you said, like bringing you back to your roots. Like, I don't know, I feel like that is kind of like low-key a place that you and I really come from with this, like growing
Definitely.
Up and seeing things like that and being like, oh, this is such an important component of the live music world and of the world in general.
In a huge way. And it really came across that way.
I bring things to a place of the world in general too often. It's like, and it's also the world.
And also the world. But no, but really, I mean.
Yeah. It's like.
It either is or should be.
Yeah.
Right. No, I'm with you. And it was, you know, one fun element. Like, I met this kid. He's probably like a little bit younger than me, who basically was giving me the lay of the land. He told me that his dad has seen over 1,000 Max Creek concerts. And I said, over 1,000, really? I was like definitely 500 plus. He's like, 500 plus? Are you kidding me? Like, yes, like over 1,000. And I was like, holy shit. Like, you know, that's a lot, you know? And anyway, and he was really cool. And it was just nice of him, you know, who's been kind of taken to these things as a literal baby, to probably like, I don't know, he's probably 20, 22, I don't know. And it was cool to get the lay of the land from him and for him to just be like, dude, thanks for coming to our small family festival, you know? And like, he basically said there are probably 1,500 people in the world who love Max Creek, but boy, do they fucking love Max Creek. And I was like, man, that's just really awesome. And I love things like that. It's so niche and so interesting on a musicological anthropological standpoint, you know. And it's it was really great. So thank you, Camp Creek and Max Creek fans, for welcoming me back from the world of television to the world of the hippie festival. That was a blast.
Well, in a very different way, I also took in something that was musically and anthropologically very interesting on Saturday night.
Tell me right now.
I went to the UBS Arena on Long Island, made a triumphant return. I've been there quite a bit these days. And I saw a band called Ghost.
Dude.
And a band called Mastodon.
Roots run so deep for us with these bands. I'm so happy you were there. I'm so wildly jealous that I didn't get to see this. I'll tell you right now. So thank God one of us was there. And we've mentioned Ghost a little bit on this podcast.
Yeah, we talked about the announcement of this tour a little
sure.
bit.
Sure. But tell the people, I mean, we have been seeing this band since they were playing the Music Hall of Williamsburg, which is 500 people, right?
Yeah.
And now they are headlining arenas.
Well, I think part of the context that we spoke about them in was that, you know, metal as a kind of genre or category of music lacks up-and-coming headliners.
I would certainly agree. And I think it's one of the more unfortunate things, you know, because I am such a fan of the genre and I want it to live forever. And I think that it provides sort of this amazing haven of protection and like a home for people that feel maybe, you know, they like a bit of disillusionment or they don't belong or whatever. Like there's a real family vibe within this genre that I felt so strongly as a kid and still feel, you know. And I love just this aggressive music, all encompassing. It's like a body feeling. It's an amazing thing. And I want it to live forever. And you're right, we are lacking younger headliners, you know.
Well, I also think, you know, with the conditions of disillusionment,
yeah,
kind of ever changing,
100%,
the genre needs to shift in its ways to meet the disillusionment of today.
100%.
And Ghost has done that because they are not kind of what someone might think of when they think of metal, although the kind of vibe of and sound of the metal of yesteryear is certainly present in their music.
Sure.
It has a kind of je ne sais quoi of its own. And did I use that right?
You sure did.
Babe. Okay. And it verges on glam. It verges on pop. It's very theatrical. And but one of the qualities of the metal music that I grew up listening to and others did, that they have really reinstated and driven to a new place, is the caliber of live performance.
Sure.
They are an incredible live band. Really, like, breathtaking, the way that they perform their songs live, the general atmosphere that they create. The stage show is, you know, extravagant and beautiful and exciting and powerful without being over the top somehow. And, you know, we love Mastodon, but they blew Mastodon off the stage. Like,
wow.
They are rightful headliners of arena rock. Long may they live.
Yes.
And play. And I was just like inspired by this show.
Incredible. And blown away.
Oh, totally. Like, you know, like you said, we saw them in clubs and they had a kind of, you know, it was obscure and it was fun and it was novel and it was neat. And, you know, I'm kind of rooting for them,
yeah,
you know, in that kind of way. And now it's like a whole sort of other, you know, level where they just have the audience in the palm of their hands in this amazing way. And it was a full moon, a harvest moon.
Yeah.
I guess harvest moon is it different than a full moon?
Yeah, I feel like that's way more up your alley than mine.
It was a harvest moon. That I can tell you for sure. And Papa Emeritus, the front man of Ghost, said, you know, it's a harvest moon. Let's all go crazy together. And that is exactly what we did. It was just very cathartic in the way that metal should be, inspiring in the way that live music should be, and just exciting.
Incredible. And we beg, beseech, and implore you, if you don't know what we're talking about when we say Ghost, go look them up, because you know what Ghost has that a lot of bands don't? Really spectacular songs.
Yes.
Spectacular, really well produced, really, you know, just what can you say? Great songs. Great songs, and songs make the band, baby, and they fucking sound amazing. So you should do yourself a favor. Look up Ghost. Go see him. Go see him with Mastodon. Also, come on now. We love Mastodon, and though they were opening sort of for Ghost on this go-around, those gentlemen are near and dear to me heart, and I'm so jealous you got to see them as well.
Oh, yeah. No shade to Mastodon.
Incredible.
If the Mastodon had ended the night, I would have been satisfied. But
sure. Ghost, man.
Yeah, really an elevated experience. And it's just been an embarrassment, a plethora of riches this week in New York City for live music, because, I mean, we, the next night, went to go see Pearl Jam together at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, my God. Bringing a whole new meaning to Never Miss a Sunday Show.
Well,
the hell?
I was thinking, maybe we should just stop the presses, because I don't even know, usually on the show, we banter with each other, yeah. You know, like talk about our experiences of music and like make each other laugh, and that's all good. But like, yeah. This show deserves like something even sort of more. Like,
totally.
How do you even put words to what Pearl Jam is and what they did on Sunday at the Garden?
It's so extreme. It's such an extreme example of spectacular live performance, having the audience in the palm of your hand, having, you know, a 30-year career of just, it's absolutely incredible what they've done, the songs they've written, the gusto with which they get up there, the fact that they went on at 9 o'clock and played until 11:30 straight, not a break, playing covers by Prince, the Dead Boys. I mean, it was one of the most spectacular shows I can remember. And they hadn't played the Garden since 2016.
Correct.
Which you and I were both at as well together.
That's an important point.
And I mean, the way we love the band and the way everyone loves the band and the way that that ticket was one of the hardest New York tickets I can remember in a long time, right? People were pouring over themselves trying to get in the door for this, and for good reason. There was not an empty seat in the house. There was not a bad seat in the house. And their lack of production, by the way, that, you know, that band could have literally dragons flying around the stage if they wanted to. It's not like they're, you know, light in the pockets. You know what I'm trying to say? And they basically have an extremely stripped down light show for the magnitude of what the band is, you know? And they're these dudes who get up there, play the fuck out of their instruments, play all the songs that you know and love from forever, and they don't need those bells and whistles. It's such a compelling part of the show that they don't have an extravagance to them, you know, in that regard.
Totally. No, and like, I will tell a kind of personal anecdote.
Please.
When I started to go see live music, I heard of like the lore of Pearl Jam. And I was like, you know, really, these are like the first concerts I went to go see. Didn't get to go see. That's the real kicker.
Ah.
So they played two nights at the Garden in 2008. And I was like home, it was the summer, and I was like, oh, I just started to go to concerts. Like, I have to go see Pearl Jam, right? They're like considered one of the most amazing live acts of all time. And I was doing all kinds of things trying to get to this show because I didn't really know what was going on. I was calling people on Craigslist. I was like going to like tickets.com, like trying to figure it out to no avail. I mean, I didn't get into the shows, but it kind of was an eye-opening moment to be like, wait, it cost how much to scalp a ticket to the back row of this show? Like, what? Like, what happens at these shows that is like so compelling to people to have this high of a demand? And have fortunately gotten to see them since then. But being shut out of those shows was a big moment for me in terms of, you know, calibrating to the way live music works and what Pearl Jam's all about. And like you said, there's minimal production, and they just play their hearts out for 2.5 hours, which is kind of short for them. I mean, they're stripping it back a little bit for this tour, but like, wow.
Unbelievable. Words barely do it justice too, right? It's like one of those things. And by the way, Isaac will be going to the city of brotherly love to see this band this week. Can't get enough, baby.
Well, it's a funny thing because like I walked out of the show and I was like, how am I supposed to go see them again? Because this was so perfect. But like at the same time, you kind of want to go see them again.
I mean, desperately. It's fucked up. It's like, what? You can't get enough. It's the perfect drug.
And they take a real hint out of the Bruce Springsteen ethos in a lot of different ways.
Big time.
Eddie and Bruce love each other. But the way that their set list is configured is such that there are songs you will get every night, like Even Flow and Alive. But there are other songs that are major songs in their catalog that they won't play every night, like Rearview Mirror, which we did get on Sunday, and songs like Jeremy in Black, which we didn't get on Sunday. And then they also have just songs that they are on this tour, you know, playing quite frequently. And those are, you know, sort of hand selected by them. And so it creates a kind of show that's not quite like Fish, where it's like, whatever will they play next? But it's also not like a standard, you know, 15, 12 song set list where you know they're going to be playing the same thing every night.
Which is a really cool way to do it. It just is. And I, you know, nothing but respect and, you know, just admiration for these guys and what they've done and what they've created. And that feeling all day of just like, holy shit, we're going to see Pearl Jam. Like, I don't even know. It's just crazy. And the night before, they played one of those, you know, Sirius XM presented shows at the Apollo Theater, which are, of course, I mean, very small, very small. Cannot stress that enough. So everyone who got to be there, holy shit, congratulations. I can't even envisage what that looks like. And for the record, you know, I sort of wish we were taping this tomorrow, Isaac, because I am going to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers at the Apollo tonight in the same fashion. And man, I'm sure I'm going to have a lot to say about that. It's one of my favorite bands of all time. One of most people's favorite bands of all time.
No, that's really super cool. And I did get a report from the Pearl Jam show at the Apollo that usually they have a standby list. And when Guns N' Roses did the same thing, 100 people got off the standby list and got into the show.
Holy shit.
And in this Pearl Jam instance,
nope.
Maybe three?
Wow.
And there was a line around the block, and I imagine it'll be the same way for the Chili Peppers, so...
Unbelievable.
Apollo Theater, Sirius XM, you're making dreams come true for a lot of people, and dreams fade away for a lot of people who don't get into these shows.
I consider myself very lucky to have a ticket to tonight's show. I just don't even know. It's a crazy thing, and we're coming to the end of our road here, but before we really wrap things up, you know, would be remiss to not mention the fact that I saw St. Vincent open for Roxy Music last night. It really has been a plethora of riches, Isaac. I mean, unbelievable. Back to the Garden. Amazing. I'm a big St. Vincent fan. This crowd was clearly there for Roxy Music and not for her, which was interesting because I've seen her headline sort of so much, it feels like, and seeing people eat out of the palm out of her hand, you know? And last night, she like really kind of had to win them over in this way that was interesting for an act that, like, you know, I think of as so having already won us all over, you know what I mean? And so she went into the crowd for her song New York and, like, you know, started picking up children and singing to them and, you know, putting her arms around people. And then everybody started standing up and, like, getting way into it. She really, it's sort of an episode about being a good fucking, you know, frontman in a good live act.
I was
going to
say, it's kind of about professionalism in these different ways.
Crazy. Crazy. And if that means you're Eddie Vedder and you're doing a 2.5 hour show where there's not a person in there who isn't hung on every word, or you're Papa Emeritus from Ghost and everybody is wildly compelled by the performance and seeing you go from, you know, a small club act to an arena act, and he's barking at the harvest moon and beseeching everyone to do the same, or you're St. Vincent, you know, having to win over an older Roxy Music crowd and figuring out how to do that in the moment and doing it with real style and grace. It's an inspiring thing, Isaac. It's unbelievable. It's cool. It's just cool to see music in all these different forms that they take and how people approach it. And, you know, at the end of the day, people are creating environments for themselves and for us, you know, and for the consumer and for, you know, it's just a moment of suspension where we can exist in these different spaces and enjoy life and sound and togetherness. And it's such an interesting thing to see how everybody does it differently. And by the way, Brian Ferry, Roxy Music did the exact same shit and it was amazing, but everyone was there for them. And, you know, there was not this sort of push and pull moment of having to win them over. They were already
right,
won.
They probably had it pretty easy.
Yeah, they had it pretty easy. But it
that
was...
That being said, right, 50-year career, you know, like...
Dude, you're 76 years old.
It's
like,
wild.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
wild. Unbelievable. So basically, all I'm trying to say is we love live music.
Right. No, we have a lot to live up to on this podcast.
Jesus.
Like, we have to do, pay respect to these bands and like, you know, they set the bar so high.
So high, and so much care and craft and attention and also free spiritedness and freewheeling and thinking on your feet. And just like, it was an inspiring week of music in all these ways, you know, being on NBC, being at the Hippie Festival, seeing performers such as Phoenix, Brian Ferry, Eddie Vedder, Matt Cameron. Sorry, what the fuck is even up with that guy on the kit? He is the best. I mean, it's been a great week of music, Isaac, and I'm glad we got to see so much of it together.
Well, to the other professionals that make sure our show sounds good,
shout out Brian Brinkman. What are you even up to, dude? Thank you. Thank you for putting us on. Shout out to RJB, the Osiris Media Network. What is going on? We love you so much. Thank you for making it all happen. Dude. Thanks for taking us to the end of our road here, Osiris. And, you know, Inappropriate Happiness, we love you, baby.
We absolutely love you, baby.
Thank you for tuning in. And Isaac, I mean, shit, do you have any parting words for the people?
We hope you feel inspired by the power of music as well.
Well put. Well put, my friend.
May it inspire you to keep it 100 in your own lives.
100% of the time. Take care, everyone.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I've been jumping turnstiles.
Osiris.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey you, do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.